As we take the atomic fireballs right down, it is right up 1 o'clock. I have to tell you, you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. We've been swing time with Mr. White, so stay tuned for the WHFR Journal and Jay Cornick.
Let's get down to the bones of it, the bones of local news and views. This is Jay Cornick, happy to be with you today. Not expecting to be with you, although always love to be with our loyal listeners, for our public affairs show. This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. And I'm joined in the studio today by my co-host, Ned Apigian. Good morning, or afternoon, Ned.
Good afternoon, yes.
Okay, I'm trying to see what mic you're on.
Is it working?
Okay, it's not that one. Okay, yes.
We got the right one.
So one out of four, so what are the odds?
You know? We have four of them hanging around.
We're usually messed up three out of four times, that's what it means. No, I should explain that I was hoping to have a vacation this week, a little personal insight into Jay Cornick's life, and I am around the station a great deal, even though I'm retired now. Aren't we all, right? Everybody in this room retired? Roger? Yes, okay. So, great show, by the way. The professor himself, Roger White, always does a great big band show, really enjoyed some of those tunes. I liked Fat Waller, too, by the way. I know Susan McGraw from the Dearborn Farmers Market and Artisans Market was also commenting on Fat Waller, and so great that we go back in time to the beginnings of big band and follow the eras all the way up to date if we can, and so we hope to have some Dearborn Farmers Market reports coming in the future weeks. At least my daughter and I are intending to go over there and shop pretty much every Friday, weather permitting, and I'm excited. I didn't get a chance to go over there today, but Susan and Roger's wife and other WHFR staff and HFCC people were over there, and the event is sponsored by HFCC, which is kind of cool, and we think it's a great idea to support local farmers and artisans, too, for that matter.
We should have a live broadcast from there today.
Yeah. Well, we had some interference problems today, so that needs to be looked into. Ned wants to sit out in the sun and help his tan along, because after it would close, we could just continue right on with the journal, you know. But live is always problematic because of beautiful Michigan weather, which can change quite rapidly. But we're going to see what we can do to help get people out and about in Dearborn and the new farm market with 27 vendors, they said this morning. 27. I think that's more than they had space for even in the old location between Tweedledum and Tweedledee. Those are the nicknames that Doug Thomas, Councilman Doug Thomas, has given to those two parking towers, because he doesn't like them, doesn't think we ever needed them. We did that story last week, too. There was a lot of cussing at the last city council meeting over
really?
The parking towers and the parking situation. Paid parking continues in West Dearborn, of course.
Do people use those things? I don't go near them, so.
Well, somewhat. The usage numbers are not high. They're still losing money on the cost of those facilities because they cost a lot to build. And we still got 15, 20, 30 years, whatever it is, to pay off the cost of the towers. And by that time, of course, we'll need new ones if we need any at all, because they'll have to be rebuilt. Buildings don't last all that long, folks, in Michigan weather. Nonetheless, this is going to be one of my four vacation weeks, which I've sort of been able to plan out, of course, the night before my flight out of town last Sunday, I came down with this flu cold thing, which I think I was telling people I was 80% well today. I'm still coughing and sneezing, and if I have a fit, Ned will take over this hour. But I've got my Kleenexes and water bottle nearby. Well, the point is that couldn't get on the plane because of sneezing and coughing. And so that is maybe a reason to get travel insurance and make sure that it even includes the common cold, because the common cold these days if you're visibly, showing signs of it, will keep you from getting on a plane because of the swine flu a panic. What passengers would want to sit next to someone who's sneezing and coughing after they've heard about swine flu and the pandemic in the world? I think that's not too much to be worried about in this country these days, but it still is a problem in terms of flights. So I've been having my vacation and being sick right here in good old Dearborn, and I feel much better now, thank you. Not that you really wanted to know that.
You sound just fine.
Well, yeah, with all the drugs and gargle that I was doing this morning. By the way, one of the best gargling solutions that is the least toxic and doesn't have any burning residue after it, if you get a sore throat, it is salt water.
I was going to say,
it's
that's
amazing.
What I do.
Yeah, one level teaspoon in a small cup of half cup of water, like maybe a coffee cup or something, and gargle, although that's not fun for some people, but gargle.
Warm water at that. Right?
Warm water is better, yeah. Gargle ferociously maybe like four times. Take a sip, and usually a half cup will go about four gargles, and it's amazing. If you do that two or three times a day, your sore throat will be gone, well, immediately for a brief period, but then maybe it'll be gone within the next day. So that's an old broadcaster's trick, but it's also very inexpensive, too. Wanted to start with our first local news story today, and that is about General Motors, of course, just because we've been talking about them, and they are still based in Detroit. Apparently, there was some discussion whether or not they would move out of the Detroit Rensen.
Why?
I think the real estate is too expensive.
Well, they own the building.
The big tower. Well, they got to pay property taxes, okay? And who knows how much of the rest of the building, if they're downsizing, is going to be filled. How many of those floors are they going to actually need in their new GM lean and mean kind of posture? But they're going to stay there, because there was a letter from Detroit Mayor Dave Bing. If you heard about this, Ned.
No, I haven't.
Okay. He wrote to President Obama, I think about a weekend ago, I think last weekend, and got an immediate phone reply from President Obama saying, we'll keep him there. Because the property taxes they're paying in Detroit are significant just on that Rensen, and it hurts the city's image not to be the motor capital of the world without even a headquarters nearby. Although Ford is going to stay in Dearborn, of course, but Dearborn is not Detroit, and of course Ford doesn't pay Detroit property taxes.
Well, so. It's not clear how much of those four towers they take now anyway.
In the middle
tower is a hotel, so even though they have their logo on top of the hotel.
Yeah. Well, the update and story to go quickly is, yes, they're bankrupt. Everybody knew about that. They did have to file for bankruptcy, and they're hoping to come out of it as not quite as quickly as Chrysler did because of all the details, of all the work that has to be done to get them restructured. And
during the bankruptcy, is there production going on, or does it have to stop?
I think they stopped production for a couple of months. That was announced earlier because of cutting back on dealerships.
For three months, but I don't know whether General Motors is cutting.
I really don't know on that. Call your local dealer and to see what supplies they have of this or that.
They got plenty of supplies, all of them, that's for sure.
Okay, that's good to know, I guess, if you want to buy a car right now. In any event, I saw this a little follow-up, and you know, actually I was flashing back into the 1950s where GM was saying, hey, what's good for GM is good for the U.S.
Mr. Charles Wilson, I think.
Yep, Charles Wilson, 55 or 56, said that.
I remember.
And you know, but people are pointing out that, geez, isn't it a monopoly? Isn't General Motors, even back in the 50s, it was so big, controlled so much of the U.S. auto market, that it, technically it would qualify to be busted up, broken up into smaller companies.
Right.
Because it gives too much unfair competition to the other companies, especially startups. Like in the early 50s, there was Tucker making the Tucker Torpedo, and even American Motors was struggling to get set up. I know my parents always bought either a Rambler or a Nash car from American Motors.
there were Studebaker that had to go out of business.
Yeah. Packard became part of Nash, and Packard line was dropped.
And Hudson. And
right, that was part of American Motors.
Before they joined, they were a company unto themselves.
Yep. So GM was
And there was Kaiser-Frazier, if you remember that, in the early 50s.
In violation of an anti-monopoly law from 1912. There were two, one in, I think, 1908 and one in 1912. 1912 was thanks to Teddy Roosevelt, President Teddy Roosevelt. When people think about him or study him in history, if they haven't studied deeply, he was two things. Actually, 1912, he was an independent. He wasn't a Republican when he ran that time. He was independent. But he was known as the trust buster. Now, not busting people's trust in America or something else, or financial savings type of trust that we think of today, but the trust. Trust was a term given to any monopoly, and inappropriately so, based on current meaning of the word. But so trustbuster was a good thing, to have something that is too big to fail in terms of destroying American economy is too dangerous to have.
Too big to have competition is what it turned out to be.
Well, right. But if they're going to fail, and GM has failed because of foreign competition, downturn market, the cost of gasoline, there's all these... A lot of issues. But if the company is so big, and we're talking about insurance companies here too, at least I am, like AIG and others, and they say, well, it's too big to fail. We've got to keep them afloat. We've got to throw tons of money in there, because if they go under, there'll be consequences, ripple effect, tsunami effect throughout our entire economic community. So we can't let that happen. However, think about this. If they would have been enforcing, I just have these little sparkling moments in my head every now and then. It's rare, but if they would have been enforcing the 1912 antitrust laws, according to the letter of the law, GM would have never gotten so big that we would have ever had to bail it out. It would have been a whole bunch of separate companies. You know, Chevy would have been separate. Cadillac would have been separate. I mean, that's a logical way to bust up these monopolies, these car companies. And if like Hummer wasn't selling, it would be gone or sold to somebody else. We think it's going to be sold to people in China, but now the Chinese government or Chinese press is saying they're not so sure that's a good buy.
First of all, that's a military vehicle. That's an offshoot of a military vehicle.
Well,
It's General, I thought it was General Dynamics that built that thing.
Yes. The separate General company Motors that makes the Hummers for us in the U.S., supposedly called the H1 or whatever.
H1, H2, and 3.
That's actually headquartered nearby in Detroit here. And our former big band person, Bill, has been sent in as a financial troubleshooter to help reorganize.
Bill Wright?
Yes. to reorganize the Hummer company right here in Michigan that makes the military version. So GM doesn't own the military company, the H1 military manufacturer, although maybe they make the non-military H1, if they do make it still, in the other Hummer company. But GM is trying to sell the other, the H2 the and
civilian,
the H3 Hummer.
The civilian models. Versions right. of those vehicles.
Right. So Bill has gone in there to our own. Bill Wright has gone in there. He was, before he retired or semi-retired, he was a financial troubleshooter and has big-time business. So the administration had his name on a list, and they called him and said, go in there and restructure the military Hummer company so that we can keep it going and so on. Well, anyway, to make the long story short, here's...
all those old guys here are something else, right?
We have tremendous backgrounds. But we don't want to just, you know, talk about our backgrounds. Here's the GM story. I happen to catch my my eye here. So, I'm just saying, what if we actually enforce that law, you know, about monopolies? Microsoft would have never got a 90% share of the computer market. They would have been separated into software and different software companies.
Isn't it?
No, they're based here in the U.S., so we can split them up. We can deal with them as needed, and that would affect them in the whole world, unless, of course, they decided up and moved to another country, moved their headquarters. And I don't know if that's easy to do.
Well, I remember one time General Motors supposedly had 52% of the auto market. Was that recently,
right.
or was it more than that in the past? I don't know.
It's been more than that in the past, yeah. Ford and Chrysler are both below 10%. Although it's true, the foreign car manufacturers had more.
I thought they were down to 20 something. They're half of what they were before around 20. Because they got five brands.
Right. And a much smaller market now for new car sales. And so, you know, the numbers are very small. Anyway, this is, I thought, interesting New York Times from yesterday, Thursday, June 4th. Always the latest in news that might affect us locally. It's just sort of a... ethical thing. The chief executive of General Motors, currently his name is Fritz Henderson, vowed to Congress last Wednesday that as long as the American, that was just this last Wednesday, that as long as the American taxpayer was its largest investor, oh, it's a week ago Wednesday, he said, quote, it's our obligation to be open and transparent in all we do to reinvent GM because the American taxpayer is the largest investor. Unquote. But for a time this week, it seemed that financial disclosures might be an exception. But late Wednesday, GM pledged to make regular disclosures during the period. It is private. Okay. GM's chief financial officer, Ray Young, said earlier this week, Monday or Tuesday, that GM was now a, quote, a privately held company, unquote, and would probably not be sharing the same information that it did as a public company before filing for bankruptcy on Monday. Young said GM was still determining how, because all the shareholders are gone.
Bankruptcy. My next question was, anybody that has GM stock, it's worthless.
The
now.
Shareholders, it's worthless.
Are they ever going to get a penny on
Depends
a dollar?
Depends on how the restructuring
the judge
happens.
Says, right.
Yeah. The bondholders are going to get a percentage, certainly, because that's always a more secure investment, but it might be as little as 10 cents on the dollar. They were offered 25 cents on the dollar, one-fourth of the value, and they turned that down. Most of them did anyway. Young said that GM was still determining how much data it would make public, although it would be provided to its quote-unquote shareholders. Well, there aren't any public shareholders.
There's only the government now.
Right, when the company filed for Chapter 11 protection. Once a company emerges, its shareholders will only be the Treasury Department of the United States of America, the Canadian and Ontario governments. A healthcare trust for retirees of the United...
the UAW.
United Automobile Workers, and its bondholders, as I mentioned. So Young's comments echoed those of Kent Crisa, GM's interim chairman. GM is operating in bankruptcy with $30 billion in debtor-in-possession financing. Debtor-in-possession
Which means
financing,
what exactly?
I don't know. Provided by the Treasury, which lent it nearly $20 billion before the bankruptcy filing. So I don't know if that adds up to 50 or
That's
whatever.
That's what it is. They have $30 billion. They have $50 billion. But you want to know something. When you look at that, what they did to the General Motors next to AIG, they gave AIG three times that much money.
Right.
How many factories did they close? How many people did they put out of work?
I want to move on.
And it was 22 people that caused the whole nightmare.
People, we've got anti-monopoly laws on the books that even Teddy Roosevelt back in 1912 said is the best thing for democracy, for capitalism. We can't let any company get too big so that it's too big to fail. In other words, if it is going to fail, the U.S. government has to bail it out. That's wrong. If they've done bad business, whether it's corrupt or just legal, like these low prime rate loans, that was legal, but when you do your, it's just very risky. And so they took the risk. They should suffer for it. Now, I know that's old news. People said, well, it's old news. I'm saying from this point on, okay, let's enforce the antitrust laws that we actually have on the books. And the best one, of course, is the most recent one, 1912, which even Teddy Roosevelt, a lot of Republicans still, oh, good old Teddy. Well, let's remember he was the trust buster. And, you know, he would have rolled over many, many times in his deceased condition if he was at all aware of how the trusts, these monopolies that are too big to fail.
Well, if you're interested in buying GM stock, it looks like you're going to...
Well, you can't right now. But.
No, right now. What's going to happen in the future is that the Ontario government, the Canadian government, the United States government will be selling their shares on the market in mm-hmm. order for them to get out of the automobile business. And I don't know. The question is, how long is that going to take before they offer that stuff to the market? You don't have to wait till they're profitable.
No, but who'd want to buy it unless the company is profitable or going to be soon profitable?
I'd be interested in seeing when they're going to offer it for sale. It's going to come out $1, $2. What do you think it's going to come out?
You know, I invested big time in Ford Motor Company. Oh, yeah, right. I bought 50 shares in December.
For a dollar.
$2 each. It was $2.
We should have bought 10,000 shares. It's five or six now, isn't it?
Well, it's at least $4. $3.30 to $4. It's been going up and down, of course, but so I've almost doubled my profits there, but it was like 50 shares. It was $100, folks. So, I mean, I did it not to make money, but to, quote-unquote, invest in America. I was in
participate.
A Santa Claus giving mood at the end of December, and I felt sorry for certain companies that I do business with a lot. Not Ford, but here I am living in Ford country, you know, and so I bought them, and oh my gosh. So Ford stock is doing well, and of course that all depends on the perception of the people that want to buy it. Do they think it's going to be making money or not?
They're not taking any money, I knew they were. The Ford family controls too much of that stock to have it go bankrupt.
I'm not sure they can pull it out, but
they're not going to. They must control 45%.
Mullally, when he came in as CEO of Ford, remember, he auctioned off almost everything about 3 years ago. They took out massive billions of dollars of cash, and that's what they're floating on now. And hopefully, if they start getting into profitability, even themselves, they're not quite profitable yet. They can ride this out pretty well. So they
bought everybody out, downsized the company.
Yep.
Sold all the strange mm-hmm. brands.
Well, strange. I don't know, Jaguar, but Land Rover. But I guess still trying to sell Volvo, or are they going to keep it? I'm not sure about that.
Saab GM. No, that's right.
And they haven't found a buyer for that yet, so we talked about that. Okay, we're going to move to truly local news. Just a couple insights there about GM that maybe you hadn't heard of. It is, oh my gosh, a third of the hour. I know last time we spent as much time talking about that, but a lot of people are concerned, and well, Ned and I made our comments. I thought big news of the week, it was in the Press and Guide last Sunday's edition and also Wednesday, June 3rd, and a little bit more... not the big hoopla, whoop-de-doo, of last Sunday. But here's a story. Let me share it with you. Council members in the Dearborn City Council were cautiously optimistic over a conference center concept. Members of the Dearborn City Council say they're, quote, cautiously optimistic, unquote, about a proposal to build a new conference center in the heart of Dearborn, despite having accepted an $8.5 million contribution Monday from Severstal North America. And talked about them... Steel company, right.
Where are they from? Sweden?
No, Russia.
It's the Russian
steel. It's a Russian company, yes.
Strange name for a Russian company.
Yeah, we mentioned a story last week is that there was another steel company here in Dearborn that got hit by EPA fines for improper reporting of toxic waste. But
local.
Yeah.
Right on Wyoming or Miller,
right.
Was it?
Yeah. But, and Severstal is doing good and making profits for themselves. And they're part of the industrial complex here, what's left of it, in the Detroit area. So Severstal North America did give that $8.5 million in exchange for providing the company with exclusive naming rights at the new facility. I assume it's going to be called the Severstall
Center,
or Conference Center or something like that. But I guess they could name it anything they want to, since they paid $8.5 million. By the way, Ford Motor Company did pay $10 million for the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center naming rights. And the only thing they said was, we don't allow the name Dearborn in there anywhere, which I thought was kind of nasty. So it could be the Ford Dearborn, you know, Conference Center, and because actually they've got these Ford, they were on a big buying spree to get their name in every community, and quite a few communities, Chicago and elsewhere, have got Ford community centers now, and that's what they call them, Ford community centers, and in our case, and Performing Arts Center. Severstall can name it whatever they want to. They gave $8.5 million up front. And it probably won't pay for the whole cost, but it's a great first step. And here's a quote from City Council President Tom Tefalsky from the Press and Guide article. He says, "I think Dearborn is a great location for a new conference center, but only if the circumstances are right." Unquote. That's his cautiousness. The article goes on to say, though still in its infancy, the proposed project has generated significant interest from city officials, particularly following a 2008 study, but that was just last year, folks, by the Metro Detroit Convention and Visitors Bureau, also known as the MDCVB.
Interesting nomenclature.
Yeah, I'll never remember that one. Anyway, Metro Detroit Convention and Visitors Bureau, which indicated that constructing a new conference center was still a viable option for the city. In other words, there's going to be people that might come by and want that kind of
what's location. The city providing the land?
Well, let's go on. I quote, Councilwoman Suzanne Serini, also being cautious, said, "I think it's a great opportunity for Dearborn, especially in these difficult economic times. According to the study that was commissioned, the project is one that will bring millions of dollars to the city of Dearborn's businesses." That's hotels, restaurants, and retail, once the people attending the conference come by, of course. And the majority of the dollars will be from out of state. And she went on to say, "That's important because we're not trading dollars, but we will, in fact, generate new revenue from convention goers from out of state." It's sort of like a balance of payments. In other words, I guess it's better for the United States to have a lot of people buying our stuff from other countries, okay, rather than, you know, people in the U.S. buying U.S. products, which a lot of people think is important or essential or required or whatever. But it's actually better for the economy of our country to get other people in other countries to send us their money, you know, that we make a profit on them. And we do send them some natural resources if the products are made out of steel or something else that's a natural resource here. But making a profit from other people, either other states or the countries, is actually better, according to Suzanne Serini's insights. And the plan continues, according to Barry Murray, director of Dearborn's Economic Development Department.
Well, or we're closer to the airport than downtown Detroit is, if that makes any difference to people.
Yeah. The new center will be located near the Hyatt Regency. That's 600 Town Center Drive, on the perimeter of the Fairlane Town Center Perimeter Drive, and would serve as a home of multi-day conferences. So people could stay at one or the several hotels. Well, I think there's three. There's a
extended
stay Marriott or whatever it is. Yeah, along with the Hyatt and the Ritz. Ritz and Hyatt, of course, are, especially the Ritz, top end, very expensive hotels. But there is an extended stay there for and
in the surrounding area.
Yeah, in the surrounding area,
many drive on Ford Road. There's several hotels.
Yes,
motels.
Absolutely, up here in Ford Road. Can't remember what that is. It was a Holiday Inn, yeah.
And then behind it became Doubleday, Doubletree.
Okay, yeah. There's something behind it, though. Is that what became Doubletree, or
no?
That was a Marriott.
The Holiday Inn became Doubletree, but behind them are other residence type for weekly rentals by I forget which company now.
Yeah. Okay.
Several of them.
Well,
they've
already chosen a 9-acre site as a potential home of the conference center, and They added that the Hyatt conference area is currently of a capacity of 600 to 700, while the proposed project could serve between 1,000 and 1,200 guests. The new facility is expected to cost between $22 million and $25 million to construct. Mayor Jack O'Reilly of Dearborn said, when it comes to a project like this, if your finances aren't in order, the project won't go forward. I'm very pleased that we were able to reach an agreement with Severstal North America, unquote. They've already, Severstal's already announced they're going to be investing approximately $900 million. Well, they've already invested $900 million to date to modernize the steel mill in Dearborn. And they're going to put another $600 million pending an upturn in the currently depressed auto and steel industry markets. So they're willing to invest more if they've got somebody to sell steel to. One of the curious things in the New York Times, too, is that a lot of local businesses that are owned by foreign companies have now been written out of any of the rescue money,
the stimulus
package, because the stimulus package says can only go to U.S. companies.
Well, the old
many cases,
Kelsey Hayes Wheel Company is a German company now. What do we call it now?
Right. Well, they wouldn't. Again, the government is got some not loopholes, but some exceptions to that. Certain states and municipalities have been going crazy, according to New York Times in the last week, passing buy only American, that is from U.S. owned and U.S. based companies. Well, gee, if they don't buy steel here in America from Severstal, there goes. Well, Severstal's investment of $900 million and their future investment of $600 million and all the Dearborn area people that work at Severstal.
It's obviously not well thought out.
Yeah.
They can't mean that. What they mean is produce locally. Otherwise, it wouldn't work.
Right. Well, it's true that a small percent or whatever percent of profit that Severstal's making goes back to Russia, to its, not the country of Russia, but to its owners.
The parent company
in Russia. Right. Because I don't know if they have stockholders or whether or not it's private over there. It's a capitalistic system, but some companies, are private.
Remember, they're called oligarchs, those guys that they sold off.
Yeah,
The Communist Party bigwigs bought off all the government stuff when they were selling it off for dimes.
If it's not Severstal, then a company that they call GAZ over there, GAZ, right, is a de facto monopoly. In other words, I'm just saying about trust busting, Russia doesn't care as long as they're making huge profits. They've got several companies that are monopoly status that are not nationalized, but they're almost got close ties to the government, so close that you might think they were operating that way. So obviously we have to raise money for this center, and the city of Dearborn is asking for federal stimulus money to help cover the cost of building a new conference center.
Are these centers going to have multi-purpose ballrooms and large rooms as well?
All the usual things. Yeah, meeting rooms, breakout rooms, banquet rooms, probably some kitchen facilities. If it's going to be $25 million to construct it, we've already got a third, so we need two-thirds more. We need about another $20 million from somewhere.
Who's going to own it? Who's the city?
Interesting question. I think it's a city, even though it's near the Hyatt Regency.
That's Ford Land Development.
Right, yeah. And so, or it was Hyatt property. And so maybe they're going to pay property taxes to Hyatt, depending on, because it's right next to it. As you mentioned, sometimes
Ford Land Development is partners and all the stuff that goes on there.
Yeah, I don't know all the details. Ned's an architect, so he knows about this land and the building contracts.
It's like the shopping center. It's a Taubman Center. Ford is a partner in that.
They're still taking a share of the profits. Paying the property taxes to the city, too, there. So, anyway, that's an exciting turn of events because it does put the stimulus money there. I wish the money would actually be found to go towards the intermodal train station that we need to have rebuilt in a little bit closer to West Dearborn.
A direct shot to the airport. Come here, park your car, and get off at
maybe.
The...
And within 10 years, high-speed rail to not just Ann Arbor, but Chicago and other places. And, boy, that would save a real multi-transportation hub, a multi-mode transportation hub. That's what intermodal means. And
well, that's what the mayor said when we had him here. How long ago was that, 6 months ago?
Well, that's a big project. It's moving ahead step by step. It could be 15 years before that goes ahead. But that's also, if I remember correctly, for the whole new station and all the new, you know, interconnections with bike trails and sidewalks and high-speed rail and so on, $30 million. So it's interestingly about the same cost. Too bad we couldn't get Severstal to put the money in there. But maybe they can build and get profitable a conference center faster than the intermodal train center. I don't think I think that's going to
be less complicated.
Less complicated, yeah, and could be built faster. You know,
just imagine the Henry Ford, the Greenfield Village, a tunnel under the track will take you from that right to the Greenfield Village.
Yeah, right now Chicago, I don't think that there's a crossover.
I don't think so.
From the current train station. They had talked about that, you know, making it a two-sided entrance to that train center, but I don't believe there is.
You could do it easy. Just go under the track.
But I think they got a fence on the other side, Ned, so.
Well, I mean, if the intention was to be able to serve the Greenfield, right now in my mind, I don't know where the village
I don't think
ends.
The current train station, excuse me, if you go across the tracks, and I don't recommend walking across the tracks, folks, ever.
But I don't know what's there now. I can't.
It's my residential area. So directly south of the train center, if you go over
is
the
a,
tracks
is
there,
it
it's the so-called, whatever it's called, Springwells area that I live in down there. Yeah, I'm not directly across the tracks, but I'm just saying is that it's called Springwells. I don't think it's called Springwells Park, just Springwells, because there's another Springwells
it's
further east.
It's the old Ford Foundation area where it's Ford Motor Company developed.
Which is a historic area and so on. And I live there, big deal. If they move to that west location, then they could build the two-sided, you might say, east, north, and south entrances, and the south entrance would be directly connected to Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield
Depends.
Village, Greenfield Village especially, yeah.
Actually, it could just as well be on one side of the track or the other.
Yes.
It could be done.
Well, apparently there's more land on the north side, on the city side. They're thinking of putting it east of, is it Krug or Daimler Lincoln Mercury.
Right.
It used to be Krug. Yeah. Let's get up to date here. All right. So anyway, that's an exciting development here in Dearborn. Tomorrow is the Rouge Rescue, and we want to just thank and commend all the volunteers and tell them dress well, cover up. The Rouge is still not habitable. You don't want to go swimming in it, but the cleanup is 8:30 a.m. to noon Saturday at Parkland Park in Dearborn Heights.
26
that's
locations
one site.
In the whole watershed, I read in the paper.
Also, Dearborn Greenway Trail, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and all the information is here in the press and guide from last Wednesday about who you can contact for more information. Fordson Island, I didn't know there was an island, but that's from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Henry Ford Community College, you can actually help out right west of our far parking lot here, and they've got a team that's going to get started. As information for that, U of M Dearborn, just south of us, invasive species removal. Ooh, let's tear out those invasive species.
How do you get to that? Take
well,
out
that's
the
probably,
piranhas out of the water?
No, it's not. I think it's certain plants that choke the waterway. I don't know if Michigan has a plant that's really bad in the south. Is it kudu?
Kudzu.
Kudzu, thank you.
In Atlanta.
That's why I have a co-host, folks. Kudzu is a disaster in the south.
Do you know where it came from?
No, do you?
Japan.
Wow. The Japanese
Somebody
invasion.
Somebody brought it here. For what purpose? I'm not quite sure.
Well, with global warming, it could come north. And then every year, talk about people doing their weeds. You're going to have to pull some really bad vines out. I know last year I let an ivy grow in my yard as ground cover. It started growing up my front tree, and it was like 6 feet high and had branches that were longer and sturdier than my tree, which is 30 feet high, it was starting to kill it. And so I had to go and start chopping away and sawing away, at the vine and bring it down to ground level, at least in terms of the tree again. And
where did you get it from? It was just
I ordered it, yeah, but it was local, and they, you know, they don't necessarily tell you with vines. I mean, it's just, it is native, this vine, but some vines, whoa, they'll grow over your house and they'll tear into the bricks after 20 or 30 years, you know, really awful. I think I had this vine about 10 years before it started taking over my tree, and but
well,
I was able to save
the arborvitae I keep buying every year would live instead of dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can probably go to the to either campus, either University of Michigan Dearborn or Henry Ford Community College, and just show up about 9 a.m.
But you know what's interesting tomorrow about that? How do you go attired? You can't. Do they provide wading boots? There could be
no
broken glass bottles in that water.
No,
oh, sir, how do you go attired?
Well, you can work on the bank and that, but definitely. I think that if you got information in advance, you come dressed for this. It says, all you need to do to jumpstart your new pursuit is join your local community, Friends of the Rouge. But I would, yes, make sure that you're well protected. Don't come in bathing suit or shorts or something like that. You need at least boots. If you're going to go deep in the water or deeper, like 2 or 3 feet into the water, you need to have wading boots that goes up to your waist or whatever.
The right kind of gloves.
Yeah,
that picks,
yeah,
well,
all
you stick
of that.
Your hand in
yeah
there and you get a broken beer bottle.
I'm sure the people organizing the things will not allow you to go in unless you're adequately protected. And that's why maybe you should contact someone in advance and find out how you need to dress. And all the numbers are in the Dearborn Pressing Guide. Too many to give out.
How about one main one?
No, we don't have any main one. Sorry. Oh, you might try
Friends
of the Rouge. They're the primary people. I don't see their key number, but I know that they have an office based at University of Michigan Dearborn. And so just look them up on the internet, Friends of the Rouge, and look into Rouge Rescue 2009 if you want to help.
There you go. Your first coughing jag, that's not bad.
Take over, Ned. What stories do you have?
Well, there was quite an interesting one about Dearborn that had to do with the public is invited to the June 14th Flag Day ceremony. Some interesting historical facts which interested me immensely. The public is invited to attend the City of Dearborn's annual Flag Day commemoration ceremony. The ceremony will take place at 2 p.m. That's June 14th, Flag Day, folks, at the flagpole in the parking lot of the Henry Ford Centennial Library. You know where that is on Michigan Avenue. The building looks like a mausoleum. The commemoration will include a dignified ceremony to burn tattered American flags in keeping with American Legion protocols for the disposal of flags that are no longer fit for public display. Members of the public may drop off tattered flags for burning at the ceremony site beginning at 1 p.m. that day. June 14th will mark the 232nd anniversary of the adoption of the nation's flag by the Continental Congress in 1777. How much do you know about the American flag? Well, listen to this. Review the information taken from the usflag.org at wikipedia.com to find out. No one knows with certainty who designed the first stars and stripes or who made it. A New Jersey congressman and signer of the Declaration of Independence named Francis Hopkinson is credited with proposing the stars. Few historians believe the popular legend that Philadelphia seamstress Betsy Ross sketched the design for or made the first flag. The colors of the flag, red, white, and blue, were selected in 1777 because they were the ones approved by the Continental Congress in 1776 for use in the Great Seal of the United States. White signifies purity and innocence, red signifies hardness and valor, and blue signifies vigilance, perseverance, and justice. There's more to the article, but it's extremely interesting, these facts.
Mm-hmm.
Let me continue for one of them.
By the way, I'm fine now, and if you want to take a break since you're coughing and choking.
No, I'm all right.
Okay, sum it up.
The It's just very interesting. It's a very long article, and historical things often interest me a lot. So, why the
Let me shift without any continuity whatsoever. Here's another story in the Dearborn Press and Guide. Just a reminder, folks: the federal border officials are now enforcing new border crossing document requirements, and that happened on June 1st. So a lot of you already found out about that. But if you're planning a trip, and either you're going to drive through Canada to get to someplace in northern New York State a little faster, or if you're going to visit beautiful Canada anywhere in Ontario or whatever, and you're crossing at the Detroit border.
Windsor for coffee, bring your passport.
A passport or these new this new little card that you can carry in your wallet, which does get you across either the U.S.-Canadian border or the U.S.-Mexican border and back. It doesn't take you for international travel. But
some
it's like
Caribbean islands as well.
Ah, thank you. Maybe as that's well. True. Okay. In any event, those documents take a little while to get. Okay, a couple weeks, whatever. And you can go to the website, which is it's a WHTI website, and it's easier to remember this. They've renamed the site getyouhome.gov. That's not grammatical, but that's what it is. In other words, if you leave the country without the right documents, you can't get back. Can't get back in without your passport. And whether or not Canada will let you get in without these U.S. documents is another question. I think they will. But the point is you can't get back easily, or maybe ever. No, just joking. I'm sure eventually you would. And so getyouhome.gov will talk about these documents that you need.
I think you can go to the post office, and just like you apply for a regular passport, you can apply for this short version.
Yeah, it's called a U.S. passport card. Okay.
You have to
I would recommend, though, because you can do it at the same time. If you don't have a passport, that costs somewhere around $90 to $100. And plus a processing fee of $25 or something. It's very reasonable. And at the same time, for another, I don't know,
$40, I think.
$40?
I remember.
Yeah, you can get the card on top of it. And so they use the same picture, and it comes in the same package. Sometimes the card comes faster. In fact, they separate it in their processing system.
You know what I don't know?
So I do highly recommend everybody today, everybody who wants to travel, or even take advantage of some last-minute, special on travel, either to Canada or whatever. And I heard this is true, too, and at least I think it is. If you're traveling, let's say, from Detroit to, let's see, where is going to cross here?
Sarnia or Windsor. You got to leave one way or another.
Maybe Detroit to Bangor, Maine or something. If they fly over Canada, you have to have the card. So you're not flying out of the U.S., but the plane is flying over Canada, so you need proper documents.
If you're flying, I think you need a passport. That card is only...
Okay.
I think I read if you go to an airport, even a year ago, when they were taking your license and all that, you needed a passport. If you showed up at the Toronto airport and you didn't bring your passport, believe me, it was a nightmare.
Yes, if you're flying out of Toronto, yeah.
No, flying to Toronto, you want to come back.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So it's the same deal.
Well, it certainly made things a lot easier for like the last 10 years, certainly since 9/11, 2001, to have a passport to identify yourself. No doubt about that, but they were still allowing driver's licenses, Michigan-issued driver's licenses, up until June 1st. So everybody knows about that. So if you're planning ahead, I'd say everybody of legal age to get your own passport.
Well,
and a U.S. passport card, too, just in case, because it's a card, and it fits in your wallet, which some people, although I'm sorry, folks, I guess I sound weird. I always travel with both. The passport's too big for your wallet. Okay, I got a day planner, and I carry it in there just so I have it. I mean, who knows if at the last minute I want to do something or just even want to go to Canada for a minute. I know the passport card is good, but if you're going to go to the cost and expense and get photographed and have to go to the post office, you might as well get both.
Here's a problem with that. I don't know if anyone ever thought of it. I have a passport. It's valid. It probably expires in 4 years, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
I go get a card today. When does that expire? When my 4 years of the other one expires, or does it expire 10 years from now? That question I've never heard anybody answer.
Know. Yeah.
But there's another problem. Children under a certain age don't need the passport. Mm-hmm. My daughter travels with four little kids, cuts across Niagara Falls from Boston to Windsor, and I forget what the...
Okay, here's... the article doesn't give...
13, I'm
not sure. Doesn't answer all the questions here. The article's on page 8A of the Press and Guide. It says, U.S. and Canadian citizen children under age 16 arriving by land or sea from Canada, Mexico, or the Caribbean, need only present proof of citizenship, such as an original or a copy of his or her birth certificate, or a consular report of birth abroad, some consulate issued that, a naturalization certificate, or a Canadian citizenship card. And so, you see, these things are very complicated. I know our listeners don't have time to write them down, so you need to go to a website or go to your local post office and get a brochure or something on this.
It's the easiest way. Just mm-hmm. go to the post office.
Right.
Now, that doesn't... the new driver's license will work just as well to go back and forth to Windsor. And that's what we care about.
That is the enhanced driver's license.
Driver's license.
And you have to, I guess, tell them you want that. Mine is not enhanced, but maybe I renewed before it.
You don't get that
available.
At the post office. I don't.
No. You get that from your Secretary of State, but right. I think there's an extra cost there. So
it's
anyway.
Worth it because then you just mm-hmm. carry that and
just
go.
Because most of us,
we want to go to Windsor and come back and forth, wouldn't it? If you're going to do some serious traveling, you definitely want to take your passport with you.
Dearborn Heights, since we have only about 10 minutes left before
you get into
Highway
that,
61.
Here's an interesting fact. Only 28% of Americans have passports. I read that the other day.
Yeah, well, that's why I mentioned this. I think especially if
you're going to be in big trouble.
If you live in Michigan and you think you're going to go to Canada or just like to check it out, Windsor is a great city, so is Toronto, and a lot of places, really wonderful things to visit, as well as Michigan, of course.
Niagara Falls, of course, Canada.
Oh, yeah. I understand they've got this barrel ride at Niagara Falls.
I don't know.
I'm just kidding. It's not recommended, folks. There is no barrel ride going over the falls. That's a life-risking enterprise, and it's completely illegal, by the way.
It's also absolutely illegal to do anything like that.
Yeah. It's illegal to try to kill yourself. So,
It still is.
Yes, it is. But on another topic, and this is sad. This is in the New York Times yesterday also. Unfulfilled prescriptions are a sign of the slump. This is very tragic and of course, not recommended by your friendly doctor. In order to economically survive, you don't have money enough to fill your prescriptions. Or some people are taking fewer pills than what they're required to.
Cut them in half. Save some money.
Yeah, well.
They're only $4 at Kroger's for generics. Well, how much
Walmart claims a $4 price copay also.
Right.
Yeah. Well, here's the story nationwide. It's nationwide, folks. It's not just in Michigan, and it's another sign of the slump, I guess, as they say. A year or so ago, when consumers buttonholed the pharmacist at Allman's Drug Store in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, the questions were invariably about dosing or side effects. In other words, how many to take or how many side effects. Now people are asking questions about the cost. Can I get this as a generic drug? Is the copay really that high? Will you match Walmart's $4 price? And a woman pleaded, I'm out of my Lexapro. Whatever drug that is, she said to the pharmacist, can I just have 4 pills until payday on Friday? Tough situation. I wonder what pharmacists are doing. The article doesn't say that, if they're being friendly or not. Some customers request prices for a fistful of prescriptions and then say they can only fill the cheapest 2. Others ask which are the most important to the doctor, to the pharmacist. And so the pharmacist responds here at Tracy Suber down there in North Carolina. She says, it can be a hard question to answer. The only thing I can do is let them know what they're for, get them the cheapest available, and encourage them to come back for the others when they can. I mean, you can't play doctor. You're a pharmacist. You can't tell the person, well, if you just take that, you'll survive. Well, that's not legal to make those calls, even though maybe some pharmacists are willing to do that. It's not legal. And in fact, folks, they don't have the training. They know what drugs interact negatively with other drugs, you know, and they can warn you about those things. Those things come with the labels. If you read more than, you know, the prescription label on the bottle, when you get a prescription, it comes in a bag. In that bag is a complete printout of safety tips about taking the drugs and what you shouldn't take them with and when, you know, what time of day. And that's not all on the label, by the way. I really recommend that people taking any prescription drugs, if they can afford them, read through that whole page of warnings and caveats and other things that are essential to know about taking that drug. But even on those documents, it doesn't say how it might risk your health, because everybody's got an individual health situation. So it's too bad. Unemployment in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, we think it's bad in Michigan. Their unemployment is 14% a year. It's probably about that in Michigan statewide now. And the recession has heightened the struggle. National survey consistently finds that as many as a third of respondents say that they're not complying with prescriptions because of cost, and that's up from 25%. So it's up to 33% now, up from 25% 3 years ago. And the pharmacists see it every day. About 8 months ago, they stopped automatically preparing refills for regular customers because they found that more than half were not being collected and had to be restocked.
Who does that? I didn't know that.
Oh, almost any drugstore will be glad to put you on automatic refills. But you have to come and buy it. I mean, they don't charge it until you get there. And so if they have it waiting for you and they either call you or an automatic message says, hey, it's ready, you know, you still have to show up. And it looks like half of these automatic refills now nationwide are not being picked up.
I know a guy that does alterations on Michigan Avenue for me, and he says he's taking money up front. They're not coming back and picking up their clothes, the cleaners, yeah. The same.
Yeah, it says the impact is already felt downstream in clinics and emergency rooms where the ailing seek treatment when their diabetes or blood pressure spikes out of control because they're not taking their medication. But they've got emergency health care, or they go and hope the hospital will pay some of the emergency costs. But that's not the way to treat an ongoing problem. So make some phone calls, people. Call your city. Call your county health departments. Call your doctor. Negotiate with your pharmacist, if that's possible. Find out where there might be you know, any sort of help agency, social service agency, and there's many in Detroit that can help you to pay for somehow medication, certainly the ones that are essential. If your doctor says they're essential, they probably are. We assume they are. You need to...
Some of their prescriptions are there so they don't get sued. Make sure you had this or had that. You know, it's not the end of the world, but some are more important than others.
Well, it's true, but who can you believe to advise you on that? Yes, you can go on the internet yourself and look some of these things up. We're not recommending that, folks. We'd be in legal trouble if we said that. Talk to your doctor. But you can get a lot of information yourself from a variety of sources, and maybe you can talk to your doctor about the necessity of all these pills in your situation. It is something to be concerned about. We want you to stay alive so you can keep listening to more of the new WHFR Journal. Did they know that they're listening to us, Ned? Ned and Jay here.
New is...
It's always new because the stories aren't the same. You know, no, they're not. They're not. They might sound the same, but they're not the same. They're new stories, updated at least. Spirit Fest, in our last two or three minutes here, we're concluding. Spirit Fest is coming up next weekend in Dearborn Heights. Actually, it starts Wednesday, so don't wait for the weekend, folks. Amusement park rides, talent review, Mayor's Walk.
Mayor's Walk
at 5:30 p.m. this coming Wednesday, June 10th, so 5:30 to 6:00. And a free T-shirt to the first 200 participants. So if you think you can walk with your mayor in Dearborn Heights or Poletko?
It's only a mile. Okay. What the heck? I walk a mile for a free T-shirt.
Right. There you go. If you're one of the first 200 to get in line, starts at 5:30.
I'm going to go to his office right now after the program and say, sign me up.
And so they're going to hear from the Divine Child Pom Pom Squad. and Divine Child High School Jazz Band is going to perform. So a big kickoff there from 4 to 11 for the amusement rides. Pay one price, $12 until 10 p.m. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all different kinds of things happening, amusement park rides, and it's usually at their Civic Center, right, Ned?
Right, on the corner of the Canfield Center area.
Yeah.
Well, also,
we've got a map here. Canfield Center, that's what it's called.
If you park at the Dearborn Heights Post Office, there's a shuttle bus that will take you to the place if you...
Oh, good to know. Yeah,
right across the street.
The Press and Guide has a two-page fold-out, separate section on what to do, and it's really no wonder we couldn't read the stories. The light's all the way up. Thank you. Oh. Joanne has arrived, and she turns the lights all the way up. And, gee, it's too bad we can't do the whole hour over. It would have gone a lot easier.
Well, it's easier to read anyway.
Well, then we're going to say goodbye, Ned.
Okay.
And it's been great being here. And coughing fits aside, thank you to all our listeners for listening to the new WHFR Journal for June the 5th. And coming up next is Joanne Korchinska, Highway 61, the best in local blues, and ably assisted today by her producer, Lynn. Yes, Lynn is going to be here because I am sick, Lynn. I look healthy. No, I don't. And did you hear my coughing fit in the last hour? Yeah, that was lovely.
Did you spritz the microphone?
No, I coughed off mic. Okay. Ned allowed me to go to the window there and cough my whatever out over there. So
it was his own decision. He had nothing.
Nothing like spending a vacation sick at home for a week. After months of planning and okay. But Dearborn is not bad. And next week I hope to be maybe the one calling in and telling you about the farmer's market. Okay, we're going to end with our theme and go right on to the Highway 61 theme. This is the new WHFR Journal from Henry Ford Community College. Thank you, Ned, for being with us. Thanks to the Press and Guide and the Times Herald. My name is Jay Koronik, and we'll be with you again next week in better health, we trust, here for local news and views. It's WHFR Dearborn. Mexico.